I think I've figured out where free energy comes from using a mathematical perspective. I think what happens is negative resistance is negative current. And current, of course, is a fiction, a mathematical shorthand for resulting voltage, or reactive voltage is actually the better way to put it, divided by impedance, or divided by simply resistance, as the case may be, or impedance mixed with resistance. Now, in a conventional way of looking at circuitry, people get stuck, and electrical engineers and physicists get stuck on the idea of complex numbers describe reactance, or as many like to call it, reactive power, but I'm trying to get away from that because it's anything but power, it's certainly not energy, so we just call it electrical reactance. So they like to say it's complex. In fact, one guy corrected me. I wanted to call it imaginary, and he corrected me, no, that's complex. And he didn't do it by focusing on it so much as more like in passing, but he kept doing it, and it was obvious he didn't agree with my way of looking at things, and I can see why. The both of us are ignorant on where free energy comes from, because he was wrong. You see, electrical engineers are stuck in quicksand when it comes to reactive power, or when it comes to reactants. They think there's only one kind, and it's nominated or evaluated or enumerated by complex numbers, and that's where they're wrong when it comes to free energy, and that's why they think free energy does not exist, because they can't imagine a situation in which electrical reactance is enumerated by purely an imaginary value, such as a real number times I, okay? And no plus or minus a real value. That's missing. So it's purely imaginary. Some multiple of I, plus or minus, okay? That's free energy. And the reason is, when you take the square of that, and you will eventually, you always must end up with a negative value. There is no ands, ifs, buts, or whatever. And you can plot it on a real number line, that you've got actually something outside the imaginary framework. Because if it was complex, you wouldn't. If you square a complex number, you always end up with a complex number. But if you square an imaginary number, no. You end up with a real number. And that's where free energy comes from. Now, how can you induce, or how can you set up such a condition so that when the imaginary component of a purely imaginary complex number with no real part there, how can it result when it's squared as a negative result every time? And thus will reverse current, which means the resulting voltage, or the reactive voltage, will also reverse. Or you could claim that the resistance underneath has been reversed. See, this is where the confusion lies. You've got a fraction of resulting voltage divided by impedance, or resistance, and that resulting voltage is reactive voltage, and you call that current, and then take away all that sloppy mess. But it's not sloppy, it's very precise. And when we're scientists, we're supposed to be precise. We're not supposed to be sloppy. It's replacing all of that with current that's sloppy, because now we've created a confusion which makes it difficult to understand what's going on, and thus very easy to dismiss free energy as a hokum story, you know, a made-up fictional fantasy. It's not. It's current that's the fantasy. Not... Okay, so when we take Ohm's law back to voltage squared divided by impedance, and the first voltage is applied voltage, and the second one is reactive voltage, now we've got something to sink our teeth. We can begin to be in a better position to understand, but we're not there yet. Now we need a purely imaginary value with no real component, so that it's not a complex value, so that when it squares, it's not complex anymore, it's negative. And what becomes negative is the resulting voltage, or if you prefer, the resistance or the impedance. But something does a flip. And it's not very, it's kind of awkward to say negative resistance and for it to have any meaning. So instead, it's best to say, well, negative voltage. The voltage has done a flip, but it's not the applied voltage that is flipped. It's the reactive voltage, which means it's the current. So we end up with negative current. Now, how can that be? Okay, I didn't get to that part. I kept it. All right. The reason why it can be, how we set it up. Well, we set it up by what I tell everybody. I learned from trial and error. Before I learned any of the theory, I had to learn the procedure. The theory comes later. 5 years of programming myself with procedure, and eventually the theory starts to gel. You know, it takes a while. It's not easy to understand theory. But procedure, hey, a dummy can follow procedure. And when you keep finding out by trial and error what works and what doesn't work, then you just go with what works, right? And you keep doing it. And one of the rules, and I've stated this in one of my posts several months ago on Quora, and I even made a movie a few years ago, how to mess up free energy, you know? But this time I tried to be more serious, you know. 10 main points, I think I call it, for creating free energy. And one of them has to do with input voltage. But I found recently, by messing with a few circuit simulations, that that's not quite true. It's really the wattage that has to be reduced. You can reduce the current and let the voltage do whatever you want it wants, or you can reduce the voltage. Either way, you got to reduce one of them. I'm not sure about reducing both. That might not be a good idea. I don't know. But at least one of them, so that the overall wattage is extremely low. Now, I used to say a microvolt, give or take a factor of 1,000. And certainly don't go any higher than 10 volts. But a millivolt is okay. Sometimes you can get away with 3 volts. But the reason why I would be able to get away with even 1,000 volts or 1,000,000 volts is because I wasn't restricting the voltage anymore to a microvolt. I was restricting the amperage to a microamp, because I was creating a bleed to an additional ground using resistors, and I think current division was what I was using. I thought at first I was using voltage division, but I think it turns out it to be current division. And so I could regulate the current input and keep it capped at a microampere. And then it didn't matter what voltage I fed it, but why waste the voltage if you can feed it a low voltage just as well as a high voltage and still get the same results? So there are a lot of different ways of restricting input, but you got to restrict it. One way or another, you have to severely restrict it so that the only thing you're inputting is a signal manifest by a minimum wattage to give it existence. And by minimum, we're talking like nanowatts, you know. It's got to be really, really dinky. Picowatts, you know. Really, really dinky wattage. Because we don't want the power to overwhelm the reactance, the input power. We want the input power to be very humble and provide merely a signal, because all of the energy is going to come from the reactive components of the circuit. And there's going to be several working in conjunction with one another in a coordinated fashion to create an overall rise of power, hopefully without too much voltage and too little current, because that can happen it can happen in the beginning, you know, when you first get success, but of course you want to tailor it and refine it so that you get more current. And in some cases I got more units of amperes than I did units of volts. And I got I got 0 volts, and I had to put in resistance to get any voltage at all. I was just getting pure current. So, you know, that's pretty good. because current is always the hardest thing to sustain and the easiest thing to lose. And of course, the transatlantic cable, telegraph cable of the 1800s is a perfect example of that. Because magnetism tends to drop off, the magnetic field tends to drop off very quickly, while the electric field is very easy to sustain. Anywho, so we want to give it a very low level of power so that reactance is not snubbed. Now, why does this happen? Well, there are two forces at work, and everybody's familiar with thermodynamics, but there's this other force that has nothing to do with thermodynamics. It's parametric in an escalatory fashion, in an amplifying fashion. all because of a parametric behavior that's taking place, in which the field, the capacitant field and the inductive field, apart from the solid, you know, component inductor or the solid capacitor component did to initiate those fields, the fields themselves are amenable to change if you don't overwhelm the input power with a humongous amount of power. You know, like 10 volts is humongous. We want 10 volts or 10 microamps so that the wattage is in the nano or pico range. And then we get this other effect that nobody gets to see because they're so busy suppressing it. And that is a rise, the opposite of thermodynamics, the opposite of entropy, a rise of the amplitude and frequency of a self-generating reactive wave in which the voltage and the current are out of phase by one half cycle. And it's usually considered to be unprecedented and to be able to do that on no power, and yet practically no power, yet that's the only way to do it. Because that way you won't have a significant real component in a complex evaluation of a reactance. You'll have so little that it'll quickly get overwhelmed by the growth of the imaginary component of a complex evaluation of a reactance. And little before you know it, the real component of a complex will keep diminishing because you've got so little input real power that, of course, it's going to diminish due to the various impedances and resistances. Meanwhile, the reactance keeps growing because it's coming from the impedances and it's not suppressed. Now, the alternative term for a voltage source, I learned, and boy, was this a great deal to learn this, is voltage regulation. A battery is a voltage regulator because we're so busy feeding voltage, the minimum voltage we have computed required by the load, let's say an electric motor in an electric car, we give so much voltage because we've computed and assumed it's not going to come from anywhere, so we become dependent on the battery, and that is so much voltage, it ends up regulating the voltages of the circuit to keep them maintained. See, in our society, we're so busy maintaining everything that we don't want deregulation of a reactance that causes all kinds of things to happen without regulation. And then something could complain. Something could explode. You know? And we don't want that, right? But you have to manage the explosive condition once you've started it going, but without over-managing it initially to such a degree that you suppress it altogether. So it's a fine line. It's a razor's edge because you're playing with Prometheus, yet you don't want to kill Prometheus before you even give birth to Prometheus, see? You want to give birth, but you immediately want to, you want to give it birth in such a way that it doesn't get out of hand right away. Now, so the real component never grows like it normally does. Instead, it diminishes, and only the reactive component of a complex evaluation of reactants continues to grow because there's no real component to get in the way and snuff it out and regulate it out of existence, which is what thermodynamics is stating. Thermodynamics runs on the assumption that you're going to give a substantial amount of voltage, the amount required, plus a little extra due to losses required by the load. And I never do that. In fact, my favorite method is to pre-charge a capacitor with 1 microvolt, and that's it. And if that circuit can't take off with that alone, then I don't know what the heck I'm doing. I don't know my business, because I do know my business. That's the best way to do it, and then you know it's over-unity because you put a pre-charge on a capacitor, 1 capacitor of 1 microvolt, or maybe you did 2, whoopee-doo, and yet that pre-charge of 1 microvolt ain't going to last. And it's going to quickly dissipate, and then you know you've got over-unity from that point forward if it continues to grow to any substantial amount, like thousands of watts or thousands of volts or thousands of amps, whatever. Now, people love to claim that simulator rounding round-off error is the sole cause for free energy arising, and so it's a fiction. Well, yeah, Randolph error, but it's not an error. It's simply a lack of a real component in a complex evaluation of reactance, such that it's there, but it's so little that it can't overwhelm the reactance anymore like it normally would in a conventional circuit, and so the reactance grows to infinity, unless it's pulsed, which you can do. You can create a circuit in which the inductances are so fragile that they literally collapse, and then they rise again, and then they collapse in a very pulsation manner, and you get a kind of self-regulation. Now, unfortunately, that is risky, because over time, enough time in passing, those pulses may suddenly jump incrementally to another higher plateau in which they hang out at, and then jump again after sufficient time. So the real test of an overunity circuit not blowing up eventually or frying itself by even graduated degree is a long period of time that you run the thing. It could be years, you know? So you've got to have all these safeguards. It's kind of like, you know, a 10-year flood, a 100-year flood, a millennial flood. You know, the longer ones are worse, but it takes longer for them to happen. And it's kind of similar in a very weak, an analogous way. It's a useful analogy. Anyway, so now I figured out mathematically the foundation for what to look for. Because it's the hardest thing. If you don't know what to look for, you won't know where to look. And I have never downloaded Mathematica. I've tried, but I couldn't do it. My situation constrained me against me for downloading it to analyze what was happening to be able to try to discover, you know, where is this free energy coming from? Because I still don't know. All I know is it's reactance, but I don't, you know, involving both capacitance and inductance. And it could involve mutual inductance. It could involve mutual capacitance between mutual inductors. You know, there's all kinds of complex possibilities, but regardless, specifically what tips it off? And I can see now that all along, my procedure for giving a very extremely low input has a lot to do with it. And it has to do with this presumption on the part of electrical engineers that are blinding them that all reactance is always enumerated as a complex value. And that is where they are wrong. That is where they have made their mistake. And in so doing, have excluded free energy from ever becoming their reality that they can own in their mind. And know, not just believe blindly, but understand how free energy can be not a con, not a fantasy of a deluded freak. No way. Because the math will bear it out. And the procedure that I learned by trial and error of over extremely low input bears it out. They are connected dots. Now, there's dots missing, obviously, you know. But I don't think it matters anymore, because this gives enough of a skeletal framework to hang the meat, the flesh of free energy onto, so that it starts to make sense. Now already it's making sense to me, because it makes perfect sense. If you're going to find it, if you're going to look for it, that's where to look for it, is in a complex number whose real component is extremely small and whose reactive component is allowed to grow without hindrance from the real component, because that's what will happen if the real component is large enough. It'll hinder the rise of the reactive component. Now, reactance tends to follow trends, or it tends to be random. And if it follows a trend, it tends to diminish, which is what's the case in conventional circuits, all due to the real component overwhelming the reactive component of a complex evaluation of reactance. Or in my situation, I encourage the reactants to rise consistently, because I consistently disallow the input voltage from, or the input current for that matter, the input power from getting in the way and suppressing the reactants. So you see, this always comes back to the same fundamental flaw of how electrical engineers are taught. And it's done very, very how shall I say it, in a way, in a very subtle manner, subliminal, in a very subliminal manner. Nobody comes out and says, oh, this is how we prevent free energy from happening so that we can continue to foist this charade on everybody's minds that free energy doesn't exist, yada, yada. No, it's very subliminal because people are simply presented examples that never involve an extremely low input. And everybody is presented with examples of the presumption that you can't get any energy from nowhere, so you're going to have to get it from the source. So now you got to calculate what the load requires and then give it that much from your source, plus a little extra for losses to cover your losses. And so everybody's programmed in a very subliminal fashion, in a way that nobody really recognizes is a form of pattern behavior modification. You know, when you want to brainwash somebody, you don't want them to notice. You want to do it in a way that they won't recognize it, so they won't fight you. Because if they fight you, you'll fail. And especially, you're dealing with adult minds, young, that's true, but adult nonetheless, when you train them in university, you don't want them to question, give them any chance to question what you're teaching them. So you got to do it a certain way. You got to present the material a certain way so that they never question what you're saying. Oh, teacher, what about this other possibility that you haven't mentioned? You've mentioned all these others, but what about this one? The one I just described to you at length, and I'm not going to repeat it because I've already repeated it a few times. Nobody brings it up because nobody thinks of it. And if they did, they'd probably brush it aside as unimportant. Well, yeah, you're not going to get paid for it. You'll only get paid for what you've been programmed to produce. And if you produce anything else, that's on your own time. No one's going to pay you, and they will laugh at you and kick proverbial dust in your face and call you all kinds of names, and you'll lose your reputation, and you might even lose your job or your ability to be hired as an electrical engineer or even a technician. You know, that's subtle too, but it's peer pressure. Once it gets magnified and everybody is doing it to each other, oh no, you're doing it all wrong. How many times have people have done that on YouTube or whatever, and they'll say to me, oh, you're doing it all wrong. You know, dude, did you ever take advanced math and you had an advanced math teacher? And apparently not. And the advanced math teacher says to all the students when he's handing out the quizzes for everybody to take the quiz, show all your work. It's not good enough to be intuitive, because a lot of people, they're such brainiacs, they just come up with the answer, and I'm one of them, and they don't even know why. And so he wants to see how you got the answer, because if you got it the wrong way, you'll get an F on that particular problem. You'll flunk that problem. And if you keep doing that consistently, you get an F on the quiz. Because you got to show that you use the methods that you were taught the prior week, if this is a weekly exam. And you don't just do anything, and certainly not do nothing and just use your intuition. You got to show that you use the technique that you were taught. And this is where it all comes down to when it comes to free energy, is that the technique is never taught, it's never alluded to, it's never suggested. No one is given a chance to even think of it as a possibility. The people who construct the curriculum have made certain of that. They've done an excellent job at suppressing any student from getting even the slightest curiosity over free energy. I had to be non-trained. Twice I tried to take 101 electrical theory in a community college, and twice I walked out the door within 3 weeks or less, sometimes just within after the first session. But sometimes it took me 3 weeks because I had two pretty girls who wanted to be my lab partners. And still, every time they taught Ohm's Law, I knew there was something fishy going on, and I bailed out of there. And now I know why. Because current is a fiction. It's a mathematical shorthand to make the lazy technician make it easy for him to call something more complicated current and take its measurement, instead of calling it by what it is: reactive voltage divided by impedance of various types within a context of time. Who wants to say all that? They just say current and keep it simple. But by keeping it simple, we keep everybody dumbed down, and they don't know any better. And this is what I'm trying to tell you. Sometimes it's a fallacy to make things simple. Initially, when you're teaching theory to your students, When they go out in the field, let them use current. Oh, it's very convenient. But when you're teaching them theory, uh-uh. You got to teach them everything or they'll never get the big picture, and problems will arise in which sometimes they won't know how to solve it. Well, I don't remember any solution for this problem. You know, teachers can't think of everything. They try to think of most situations that an electrical engineer will come up against, and so that they can brainwash them with, okay, in problem A, choose solution A. Problem B, choose solution B. But what if you get to AX and nobody's covered it? And then what do they say for that, huh? Do they say just bail out? Do they say just tie off the ends and leave it? The ends of the leads, the terminals of whatever it is you're working with? I mean, what do they tell? I don't know. I'm curious. What kind of garbage do they tell the student when all they've taught them is not good enough? Well, I'll answer my own question. It's a rhetorical question. I already know the answer. Always assume the physics promotion idea that you can't get energy from nothing. There's no such thing as a free lunch. And so you have to calculate what the load is and give it a little extra to make up for the load and plus losses. And that one rule of thumb, which has become a law of physics, when it's just a rule of thumb and it's not anything else. If you want to do things our way, our style of doing things, then you follow this rule of thumb. No, we've called it now a law of physics, and it has no business telling electrical engineers what to do. Unless, of course, you want to follow along the corporate model and be a good little patsy, a little pawn. You know, when it comes right down to it, nobody can be self-sufficient because nobody knows how to create their own energy. They got to go buy it from somebody else. This is where I draw the line.